Thank you very much, Angela. I'm very pleased to be here. This is a short visit for Hong Kong, to Hong Kong for me. I'm just here for a week, and I was very pleased to be able to spend a couple days at the Hong Kong University and have a chance to talk with people. I like having small groups, small audiences, because I'd like to encourage you to participate and ask questions and make comments about whether you feel this might work for you or not, and tell me your experiences. I'm going to actually start out and tell you a little bit about where I'm from, just to give you a little background, New Jersey Institute of Technology, and then I'll come back and talk about meta information some more, and hopefully run a live demo of our prototype, which is a very early prototype, but give you a sneak preview of that. So just a very brief background on our school. First of all, we are located near New York City. I pulled up a weather map of the United States, a very good day in the United States, just little clouds from, it's from May. But we're located in Newark, New Jersey, in University Heights in Newark, and we're right near New York City. So that's the area that I'm from. And NJIT is a public research university, which means that we're very interested in obviously, we're very interested in teaching, but we're also very interested in doing good research. They're both important to us. It is a state-funded school, and our university has several schools of engineering and architecture, School of Business of Management, Science and Liberal Arts, and I'm inside the College of Computing Sciences. We have about 8,000 students, 5,000 undergraduate and 3,000 graduate students. Many are part-time, so they're working full-time either in New York City or in the major industries around northern New Jersey, and then on their way home they'll come and take some courses. Or we also do a lot of distance learning, a lot of distance education as well. And the College of Computing Sciences has two departments, computer science and information systems. And I've just given some personal definitions of, I keep hitting the microphone, I don't know what that's going to sound like on the recording. These are my own personal definitions, where computer science is looking at how you develop, design and develop computers and also software to work efficiently. And information systems is looking at how you use computers effectively, how you use technology effectively to support individuals and to support organizations. And we take a very broad view of information systems. The typical management information systems looks at how you use technology to help organizations and to make organizations more effective. But we take a broader view beyond that to look at how you make educators more effective, how you use technology in education, how you would use it to support scientists, how you would use it to support engineers, as well as how you would use it to support businesses and organizations, and how you would support people at home. So a very broad range of technology is used in our society, and we really like to look at all of the facets possible. I'll just mention briefly, we have in our department about 42 professors. We offer a range of degree programs from undergraduate to PhD and do a fair amount of research as well as hopefully some good teaching as well. And with that overview of where I'm from, I will move into the talk on meta information. And again, I would like to encourage everyone to ask questions, to participate as much as possible. Certainly our students at home feel very free to jump right in and join the discussion. So I'd like to invite you to do the same. This is work I'm doing with two PhD students primarily, along with some others. Joe Catania is working on the aspect of relationship analysis, which I'll mention later. And Li Zhang, who's actually from mainland China, PhD student, is working on some aspects of working with virtual documents that I'll talk about a little bit later. I'd like to start you out with a thinking exercise. So I'd like everyone to close their eyes. No cheating. Close your eyes and think of your favorite website or a business or a favorite site, maybe not a favorite site, but one you use for work. And think of that site, and within that site, pick an object. Pick something you might be interested in focusing in on. It could be a piece of text. It could be an icon. It could be an element, a piece of data inside a table, or it might be an animation. And think about that site and that object. don't you want to know more about that object? Don't you want to say, what is this exactly? Can you define it? Tell me more about it. What can I do with it? What's the next thing that follows from this? What's the next step from this? Can I change it? How is it different from similar ones? These are all, you can open your eyes now. These are all different types of meta-information, really understanding what an object is. And I think people should have access to that in all sorts of web applications. This is, when I was putting together this talk, what I'm trying to do is really tie together a lot of the research, a lot of the things that I'm thinking about, and ways that I hope the web, the World Wide Web, is going to be heading. And I'm hoping that we'll have much more access to this kind of meta-information. And I call this the why principle, what you want, when you want it. And you should be able to get that access anytime you want to inside the applications that we use every day. So again, that's the goal. Where we'd like to head with our research and our development is to really provide this widespread metadata inside the everyday systems that all of us use. To do that, we're going to have to give people the tools to do it. We can't just say, go off and do it, without giving people the way to do it. So we're working on an area called relationship analysis, which will help people figure out what kind of metadata, what kind of meta information they should provide inside systems in a systematic way. We're developing a meta information engine, which I'll give you a brief demo of, which actually generates this meta information automatically. And we have a design principle, the why design principle, that we're hoping that web developers and other systems developers will follow to try to bring more of this access to users. So I'm going to start out by showing you some examples, really some mock-up, sort of thinking examples where we went ahead, and then talk about what meta information is in some more detail. Talk about relationship analysis, which is an approach for finding meta information, the meta information engine that can generate it automatically. There's some very interesting issues dealing with virtual documents, which are part of many of the business systems that we use. Talk a bit about related work and then come back and summarize with that why principle, what it will take to actually implement that on a wide scale way. So we're going to do two examples, one of a purchasing system, one of a digital library. These are going to be screen mock-ups, so they're not real systems, but they're rather to show as a proof of to show the concepts. The first one is a mock-up of a shipping system that we use at NJIT. It's an old legacy system. There's no links in it. Actually, it's not even on the web yet. I just put it inside a web browser to sort of prove some points here. So this sample screenshot from the purchase system. But really, you want to point to a lot of these things and say, what is this? How do I use it? What am I supposed to do with it? Tell me more about this vendor. Is it a good vendor or not? So we really want to make everything on here into a link anchor, because you want to potentially look for meta information about anything on here. And then if you select something, such as a vendor, we want to generate a list of links to related information. Find out vendor details or vendor reliability, assuming for this particular vendor, agreements. And we might have to look in various different applications, different information systems for this. So the vendor information system might be able to tell us about reliability or agreements we have with that vendor. We might have to look inside the purchasing data warehouse to find other possible vendors for that particular product. If we want to see our purchasing history, we might have to look in the purchasing information system. If we're a system developer and want to look at other screens in my system that use a vendor, I might have to look in my case tool. So we want to be able to provide all these links automatically for the system. And as another example, we're starting to work with digital libraries, and that's actually the prototype I'll show you. So when a document comes up on the screen, we want to be able to add in link anchors to pretty much anything we recognize that the user might want to click on. And when the user selects a link anchor, such as on plant pathology, we'll put up a list of links relevant for that particular object. In this case, ask an expert about this object or look for experiments about this in various systems. And there also should be meta information about the document as a whole. So this will be about a particular element in the document. For the entire document, we might want to find out who authored this document, find some metadata like that. add in a peer review comment, search for related documents. So again, more information around the entire document as well. So these are just two thinking examples, and I'm going to come back to both of them several times during the talk. If there are any questions, again, please feel free to jump in. The idea of meta information is to really help you take a particular element inside your application and truly understand it, understand the context around it, understand the element itself better. So we're looking at the typical ideas of metadata that probably everybody's heard about that generally give you characteristics of a particular element, but also all the relationships, all the information around that. We call that the relationships add to the meta information, because it's showing you how this element is related to other elements inside the environment. And hopefully by understanding the metadata inside the element, you'll understand the element better, and by understanding the relationships, you'll understand its context better. And that will give you a much deeper understanding of how that element fits into the environment you're dealing with. So meta information is in part metadata that we're familiar with. It's also with several kinds of relationships. Content relationships that are based on the text or the content, the display content. So for example, if you have the word, IBM, as a company, you can go off and find things related to IBM. But also structural relationships that are based on the element type. And I'll give some examples of all of these in a little bit. But we might want to know that IBM is a company, so therefore we can say, well, what kind of relationships do we know about a company? And then annotation relationships would be the, especially relationships that where people would add information, particularly the knowledge sharing types of things, adding a comment, adding a bookmark, putting this in a guided tour to show how it's related to other things. And then these annotation relationships often will be shared. They'll either be used personally by somebody, so they sort of remember things, or they'll be shared among coworkers, or maybe even made public. So the widespread annotation relationships to share knowledge. And finally, I believe that users, if you have these, users should be able to cross to take advantage of these. So there should be navigation, meta information-based navigation. And what that simply means is the user should be in control of navigation within an application. Often when people write applications, they thought out the process of how somebody, the flow that people should follow, and then they can't go anywhere else, or it's more difficult for them to go elsewhere. And I believe that once you put this meta information in, that people should be allowed to follow it. Before they go down the flow, they might want to find more information out about a particular step, or they might want to go in a direction that's different than the designer originally imagined. So people should have the freedom to navigate around in the way that's most useful for their particular task for the reason they're using that application. I should mention that meta information is some work that one of my former PhD students, Roberto Gonzalez, has worked on some of these concepts. So, I should back up. So within this document, if we want to illustrate some of those, you might have metadata, which is sort of standard. Show me who is the author of this document. There's content-based relationships. Find me similar documents based on the document title or some of its content. Then there might be structural relationships such as, for this concept, ask an expert about this concept. It'll work for any concept, not just this particular one. Or find me inside the NASA Space Science Data Center. If it's a particular kind of concept that's relevant to NASA, show me experiments that have been done from space regarding this concept. What else is here? Annotation. Create a comment on this particular document. So these are just some examples of these types of meta information. In addition, if we go back to this purchasing example, all of these are examples of structural relationships, because you'll get the same set of relationships for any vendor. These will come up. They don't rely on being a particular vendor. So with that definition of meta information, I'll go on and tell you about relationship analysis, which is a way to discover what meta information might be available for your application. Relationship analysis is a methodology that we're currently developing for the software engineering lifecycle. That's either part of software engineering, or in the business world, that's often called systems analysis and design. And if you look at the work, the various techniques that might have been covered inside a systems analysis and design course, there is no technique for taking an information domain and figuring out what the relationships are. There are techniques for figuring out the entities, or the objects, or the elements, such as a use case, doing a use case analysis. And the use case analysis will help you figure out what are the objects in your domain, or what are the entities or elements you're looking at. But then, there's maybe some rules of thumb, there's some guidelines to figure out how those are interrelated, but no real technique that really dives in and looks at those in detail. Yes?
Data modeling and business rules analysis.
Data modeling
is all about relationships between entities. You end up with statements like purchase order is generated by purchaser.
Right, but what is the technique to come up with those relationships? Often it's, at least in my experience, often it's basically it's expected that the relationships will be intuitive. If you know what your elements are, that you should be able to find them. And sometimes they'll give you some guidelines or rules of thumb to follow to generate the to figure out what the relationships are between them.
If you're building a data model and you're using a full formal method like IDF1X, then you're going to be writing down entities, defining the entities, writing relationships, formally defining relationships, and you're going to have to ask the people in the knowledge domain what the relationships are. So there is formal encouragement in the methodology. People can leave it out, of course, but the tools are there for collecting it and for displaying it in an entity relationship diagram or an abstract data model. And tools allow you to display it.
Right.
But of course, this is the entity level rather than attribute level.
Attributes and also relationships. I would ask again, what is the approach that somebody takes to actually figure out what the relationships are? Is there a formal methodology, a formal technique or process that's followed to actually figure out those relationships?
Well, it depends what you mean by formal, but I mean, I've done many years of data modeling.
Okay.
And my approach is to sit down with an expert in the user domain, and every relationship that's drawn between two entities, I want to know both ways what it is. You know, this one includes that one, and this one is included by that one,
okay.
But at a much more detailed level than just is included by or included.
Okay, well, I'd be interested in maybe talking to you a little bit later as I go on and see if this might be if this is a tool that might help that process out, or if there is already an existing tool or technique embedded within there, which I might not be familiar with. In talking around a lot, we really haven't found people who have said, we already have this. So in my experience, this is still something that seems to be a fairly large gap in the area of systems analysis. Basically, it is a brainstorming technique, which sounds similar. You do sit down with a domain expert, but we have then structured a series of questions you ask that is based on, I don't remember, I have to see what my slides are now, I might be coming ahead of myself a little bit, but we've started out with, let's see if I'm saying anything. Let me give you the motivation, go through the approach, and maybe we can come back and see it. Okay, I already said this. Basically, the goal of this, as we see it, is in part to have a much deeper understanding of your system, of your information domain, by using this approach. That it will also yield, hopefully, a richer analysis that then feeds into the design, that feeds into whatever design you use. It could be class diagrams or anything else. And so, with the goal that your design is more correct also because it's more detailed, and when you come later on implementing, you don't have to go back as often and add things that might have been forgotten. In addition, we're often looking, as part of understanding the system more deeply, we often identify multiple links, multiple relationships between any two entities, which isn't often done in many analyses. But they generally find a single relationship that might be what they consider the dominant one and ignore the other ones. But I think the other ones give you a much fuller picture of the system. of the system in general. And then, of course, when you design, the relationships can be implemented as links. And this is work that Joe Catania is doing for his dissertation. So the approach is, again, a brainstorming approach. You can start out, you know, working with an expert. You can start out working on an existing system and analyzing it by picking objects, sort of as we did in our thinking exercise. Or for a new system, you could start out with the use case and pick the entities from there. And basically start asking questions that are based on our taxonomy. We develop a taxonomy or classification of different kinds of relationships based on Gilford's structure of intellect theory from the 50s, which describes intelligence, intellect, and creativity. And it was refined about 10 years ago by Rao and Turov, who developed what they called a hypermedia morphology for use specifically in systems analysis. And we based our work on that. In particular, and I'm not going to go over any detail here, I'm just going to breeze through it. But basically the idea is that objects can be classified in these six general categories. This is according to Gilford and the hypermedia morphology. And then for each of these categories, there are two types of links that might come out of that. So for a definition link, you might come out and have a specification which gives you more information about that object and also elaboration information that branches out from that object. And then for each of these various sets of relationships, membership and aggregation, association characteristic, we developed a template that the user would work with the domain expert to fill in, where we have a list of questions, very generic questions for each kind of category that we ask. Does this have a description? Does it have a definition? Does it have an explanation? Is there a set of instructions? Is there an illustration? To try to ask these questions to the expert to elicit knowledge from them, elicit an understanding of that particular element. These would be specification types of questions. We'd also have a series of questions for elaboration and a series of other questions. So by doing this brainstorm, we hope to identify relationships, and these also will help to identify metadata. And this hopefully will help to identify the meta information around a particular object. So we can come back and discuss data analysis a little bit later. Once we have an idea of what meta information we want to generate or we want to provide, then we can use the meta information engine to actually automate it and provide it. The meta information engine provides what we call just-in-time meta information, which is especially necessary for virtual documents. If you're issuing some type of query to a system and it generates an answer, if you're interacting with the system and generates a document based on your input, that document is created right then. And we have to add the meta information at the time it's being generated. So we've been concentrating on doing this on the fly as much as possible. We'll automatically generate those link anchors we saw inside the document, and when the user clicks on a link anchor, we'll generate a list of links. And these links will go off to related information and also to services that can act on that kind of object. And those to provide either provide metadata or content-based relationships or structural relationships or annotation relationships. And this enables you to navigate along those relationships. What this is really providing is what we call lightweight systems integration through linking and providing this to everyday systems. And I'm going to be talking more about this following. And this is also work that Roberto Gonaris has worked on. I think at this point I'm going to jump in and do a quick demonstration of a prototype we have in the area of digital libraries. So I'm going to pause and go into that. This, I have to warn you, this is very much a proof of concept demonstration. It's about 3 weeks old, and it's for work we're doing specifically to integrate digital libraries. So it's to some extent different from business systems, but you can imagine, hopefully you'll imagine taking these kinds of ideas, applying this to types of systems that you all use. We've integrated here three or four different systems. One of them is the National Space Science Data Center, which is actually a NASA data set that they put in. And you're allowed in this particular screen to type in names of space missions, and you get back space missions that match those. So let's put in Challenger. And this is sort of our system around it, and this is actually the page at NASA, which we've embedded in the middle of our system. So NASA's search engine has returned two space missions, Apollo 17. I'm not sure why it returns that for Challenger, but they do, and also the Challenger mission. What we've done is we've added on these little eye icons, both for the launch date and for the spacecraft name. These are actually documents here. And if you click on these, we display structural relationships for this kind of element. So for launch date, if you click on that, you'll get three different links. And these are actually services that this NASA engine will provide to issue new queries, show you all the different space missions that have launched on this date, that have launched on this month and year, and have launched on this year. If you click on those, it'll send some commands to this NASA system to re-execute those new queries. And these are structural. These are queries specifically for a launch date entity, for a launch date object or element. If we click on this eye icon, which is next to a document, we'll get a different set of links. In this case, we'll probably just get one link to summarize this document. And if I click on this, this is actually going to take us off over to a system at the University of Arizona called the University of Arizona Document Summarizer. And its job is to take any document, such as this NASA document we just passed to it, and summarize it in two sentences. A red sentence and a blue sentence or purple sentence here. And if you scroll down the document, you see that they decided, whatever algorithm they use, that this is the first sentence that they use in the summary, and this one down here is the second sentence. But the point is that we've integrated now two systems. We've integrated the NASA Space Science Data Center with the University of Arizona Document Summarizer. In addition, so these are structural relationships. You can summarize any document. Anywhere where we see a document, we'll add that particular link to it. If we look inside the document itself, are we getting there? Yes. We also add in lexical links. And one thing we need to do is to integrate our lexical links with our structural links, but that will come with, or I should say content links with our structural links. That will come with time. We actually go through and we look for key phrases, keywords that we recognize, such as the moon. And if you click on that, we'll generate a series of lexical links in real time, such as we can look in the thesaurus to see the definition of whatever we've clicked on. We can go into some specific types of search engines, such as the concept hierarchy search engine we developed at NJIT, or we can go and do a Google search for this particular item. These are content-based relationships. So, for example, if we look inside the thesaurus, it tells you which thesaurus or which glossary it found this from. In this case, it's the mesh descriptor glossary, which is actually a medical term glossary. So I'm not sure what the moon is doing in a medical term glossary, but it's there. And so it defined the moon for us from that glossary, and also it's found additional lexical links. And if you click on any of them, we'll get, again, a list of links. They're actually the same ones we saw before, but there's an additional one here over to another digital library called the Earth Science Picture of the Day, which apparently has some pictures about geography, which we've just clicked on. So if you click on that, I don't know which one I just clicked on, it takes us over to the Earth Science Picture of the Day system. So this is just a brief example of how we've integrated three different digital library systems together. So what I'm going to do is go back to my talk and say how we did it next. Absolutely.
Just pop up a series of links that's generated dynamically. What's correct. The mechanism? What's it drawing on to generate that dynamically?
That's what I'll show you next.
Okay.
That's the next step of the talk, is to tell you how we did this. Let's close this up here. Go back to here. Does this bring us to that point? I think this should bring us right in the middle. Let's see. Here we go, just a bit of demonstration. Okay, what I'm going to do is instead of explaining it on our three-week-old demo, I'm going to go back to our old mock-up slides and explain it from here. So let's say we have, again, our purchasing system. which, if you select a particular element, such as this vendor ID, generates this list of links for you. This is our engine architecture for the Meta Information Engine. I'm not going to get too much more technical than this. I'm just going to cover it at a pretty high level. Okay, so we have the user's web browser up here. We have all these systems down here, the vendor information system, the purchasing system, the NASA system, the University of Arizona system. And users can use these systems just as they did before without our engine in the middle. But if you place the Meta Information Engine in the middle, then it will provide these additional links, link anchors, and provide these additional links as a supplemental service and affect integration through that. And the engine's written, we're using the latest web technologies. It's written in Java. We're using XML and XPath and SOAP and things like that internally. To integrate in an application, to put in an application, you need to do three things. You need to write a wrapper, define relationship rules, and tell us what glossaries are available. The job of the wrapper, every system needs a wrapper. And what the wrapper does is essentially tell us how to parse that document, how to look through the document and identify where we want link anchors that the user then can click on to get more information. That's the job of the wrapper, is just to tell us how to process your documents to identify the anchors. And that can be a relatively easy job, and it can be relatively difficult. If it's most systems where you ask queries of, database types of systems or analysis systems, the document follows a very set format. So any query you issue is going to come back with the same format document. So we can follow that template to identify elements. If the document's marked up really nicely in XML, as things are slowly starting to happen, then we can use those XML tags to identify elements. There might be an API, an application programming interface, that might help us identify the elements. There could be many ways. Those will make it relatively easy to write a wrapper. If you provide no help at all, then we're not going to be able to identify elements very easily, and we'll have to rely on keyword search, on lexical analysis, which is the second thing we always do. So that's the wrapper. It helps us look at each document and figure out how to process it. The second step is to write what we call relationship rules. That essentially says, tell us what services your application can provide for what kind of elements. So, for example, if you have an employee, well, I'm probably jumping ahead of myself. I'll show you an example of those in a minute. But when we had that list of links, those were all services that each of those applications could provide for a vendor. So they said, the vendor information system said, I can show you vendor reliability if you give me a vendor. I can give you details of working with that vendor if you pass me a vendor. I forget what the other ones are now. It's my own mock-up screen. But each of these systems has declared what services it can provide for a vendor object. So let's take a look at one of those, the vendor information system wrapper, and look at the relationship rules that you might specify for that. And again, we're going to keep this at a high level, showing you the rule for that first link that comes up, the vendor details. So what you have to do essentially is declare the rule. Is this for a vendor object? What kind of object it's for? What to display in the menu to the user, vendor details, metadata about the relationship, not about the vendor object, but rather about this particular relationship or link, and that helps us do filtering later on. So this is an elaboration relationship, and maybe provide some keywords for it so we can do some automated processing. What happens when you click on this? Should you go? Should you go off to the vendor information system? We should send it some commands so it can return this information. So we might have a command that might look like this. And lastly, under what conditions should we give the user this link? When should we show this and when should we not show this? So different users might have access to certain information or certain systems. It might be based on their preferences or their tasks or other conditions you can specify here. So we have this kind of rule for every single for every link that comes up. And we're also using these rules for specifying metadata, the structural relationships that I just saw, content-based relationships, and also the annotation relationships, and using them to give access then to the meta information navigation. So we're using those relationship rules as a way of really providing the links and providing the meta information-based navigation. Another, I'm not sure if I should get ahead of myself. I won't show the other rules. I have an example of a rule for metadata and also for annotations, but those are in the notes. And I also showed you the prototype before. So in this prototype, we have a rule for launch dates. In fact, a rule for each of these three different links. So there are actually three different rules scheduled for a launch date element. Well, we don't have this second one anymore, but one rule under document summarizes document that fits under document elements. If you think about an employee, let's say you have an employee, you might have a rule from the addressing system that says, if you give me an employee, I can provide their address for you. There might be a rule or two from the project management system that says, if you give me an employee, I can tell you which projects they're working on and which projects they're the head of. There might be a couple of rules from the human resources system. Assuming you have access, you know, I can give you this employee's salary, I can tell you where they're working, what their skill set is, you know, what their employment history is. There might be a rule from the budgeting system saying I can show you all budgets that this employee is in charge of or has access to. So you declare the services that your particular application can provide for any kind of element the user might click on. And I think just to follow through, let me go back on that thought. So when the user, let me just run through the flow here one more time. So when the user, when the system produces a document, it passes up through the wrapper. The wrapper tells us how to find all the link anchors. So when the user sees that document, they see it with our link anchors on it. When you click on a link anchor, we look through our rule base. Our relationship engine has a rule base, looks through all the structural relationships, and finds all the services from this application, this one, and this one, and this one, and this one, that work on that kind of object that the user clicked on. And we make each of those into a link. And then when the user clicks on any of those links, then we send the user off to that application or this one, whoever can provide that particular service. And that gives us integration. That gives us systems integration without modifying any of the applications. To do an application, you write a wrapper for it, and you say what services it provides. We're not doing data integration. We're not, when you put an application in, it doesn't have to know about any of the other applications. So this is why we call this lightweight systems integration through linking. It's virtual integration, and it's lightweight because you don't have to know about anything else. And we feel that's an important part of automatically providing meta information easily. There are some interesting issues here, a lot of interesting issues here. Here are just a couple of them. One of the big ones is information overload. If I click on something, I may get 150 links. So we're working on how you filter those links and customize them for a particular user based on what tasks they're working on. There might be too many anchors in a document, so we're going to be looking at a way of just figuring out which anchors are relevant for a user, again, as much as possible. And there are some other user interface techniques involved. This really requires good user interface design. I will be the first to admit that our prototype does not have a wonderful user interface, but that's something we know we need to start working on. We're working on the mechanism first, then we'll work on the design. There's some interesting issues of semantics, and actually this slide later on about the semantic web. But the idea that when you integrate in a new system, that when you identify the element types, you have to make sure that you call it an employee and these other systems call it an employee instead of a worker. Otherwise, you're not going to know it's the same element. So a way of trying to standardize element types. And for virtual documents especially, we're going to need to have persistent identifiers for elements. So these are things we're worrying about internally, along with a bunch of other stuff as well. So I'm going to turn and talk a little bit about virtual documents and some of the issues there. Many of the documents we see in everyday systems are virtual documents. They're going to be based on the user issuing a query. Those query results are in a virtual document. Often documents, or they're talking more and more about customizing documents so each user gets a different version of a document. It's used especially in intelligent tutoring systems, for example, but also more broadly. So each of those documents is created at the time the user wants to see it. And for each of these, because it comes up, it's just created, we can't predefine the metadata information in it, but rather we need to add all that meta information at the time the document is created. So I want to give you a scenario to talk about, show you some of the issues involved here. Let's say you're an analyst. You're doing a transportation analysis to figure out how many vehicles you need for shipping whatever you're shipping. So you've done your analysis. It's up on the screen. You might want to add some comments to your results, and you put a bookmark to it so it's now sitting in your favorites list, and you can get back to that document later. And you click the close box, and that document is gone. It's not saved anywhere. So a couple days later, or a couple hours later, you come back and you want to get to that document again. So you follow you go to your favorites list, you follow that bookmark to that document. What's going to happen? Because the document doesn't exist. Somehow that document has to get recreated or regenerated. And once you see it, we're going to have to add in all the links we had before, the links off to your comments, as well as then other links that people might have made to that document. So we somehow have to regenerate the document and relocate the comment anchors and do that at the time the user asks to see that document again, follows that favorite bookmark. So this has led us to work on the following issues. We need a way to regenerate virtual documents without the user typing in all the parameters again. Some systems will let you just hang all the parameters on the URL, but not every system lets you do that. Many don't. So we want the user to be able to get that document without re-entering the parameters. And once we have that document, it's going to have to pass through the meta information engine to the wrapper so we add the anchors to it again. To do that, we need to re-identify the elements. We have to re-identify where the link anchors might be, where are the elements of interest in this document. And often with these virtual documents, the location of these elements is shifted. It could be something as... Or might have changed. It could be something as simple as this is the price of a stock, and it's not the same price as it was before. It might have been $100 before, and now it's $2, or hopefully it's more. It's $1,000. So the element location shift. If it's a document that's put together on the fly, they might add new paragraphs, or things might shift around, and the content might change. And finally, if we had anchors there before, we need to relocate those anchors on top of the elements. So these are challenges for providing, automating meta information inside virtual documents. And this is work that my graduate student, Li Zhang, is working on for her dissertation. And I can make a whole hour's talk just about virtual documents, so I'm going to stop on that topic right now. See how we're doing time-wise. Talk a little bit about some related work and then close up, and hopefully we'll have a couple minutes left for questions. There's many other types of related work as well we can talk about, so I just pulled out a couple things. How is this related to web services, for example? We feel the meta information engine really is a kind of web service. We really view it as a linking service or a meta information engine service, meta information service. And we really like to set this up so other applications, when they're about to display some information to the screen, might pass us their page. We would supplement it with a whole bunch of links, send it back to them, and they could display it. But we also can take advantage of existing web services. We can include, in our list of links, we can include links to other web services that exist. Either we might know about them in advance, or we could dynamically find those web services and include them in. We can also take existing web services from elsewhere and add links to them. So when they're about to be displayed in some application we know about, or they might use this as a service, when they display their currency conversion or stock price locator or other information like that, that we will then put links inside that page, and then users can access other related information to those web services, to the information in them. We're looking at work done in the semantic web, which is, if you're not that familiar with it, it's an effort that's being followed by the World Wide Web Consortium. Those are the folks that are responsible for the web and many of the web standards there. And the semantic web is looking at the use of ontologies, which are essentially classifications or how different things are related, how different terms are related to each other. And the goal of the semantic web is to be able to do a lot of automation on the web, automatically find information on the web, automatically understand documents that come back, and to do a lot of automatic description and processing those descriptions, especially by robots and agents and things like that. And what they're encouraging to do is there's lots of different groups to come up with classifications of the various terms of the various things inside their websites or the things inside their environment they're dealing with. And there are going to be problems because there are going to be clashes of definition and clashes of terms. So these are problems that people are working on. We can take advantage in our work of a lot of the things that are going on in the work on the semantic web. In particular, we can use these ontologies or these classifications that are people developing in the business area and finance and space and education and other areas. In part, we can use it to standardize our element types. Hopefully, we can buy into some classifications and use them for all the systems when they plug in and they're defining their services. They can use a standard set of element types so we know that they're all talking about the same element or the same kind of element. We can also use this to add some additional content-based links for our system. So if you click on an element such as a stock, then we can look at to find related information based on the ontologies to find what kind of elements are related to a stock, company, a price, which market area it's in, things like that. And that will enable us to do some additional automated linking through that. There are some similar systems that some people might have seen that do what appears to be similar. One of them is NBC's QuickClick, which I think went defunct actually about a year ago, but some people might have come across it. Microsoft Smart Tags does something similar. Basically, what these systems do is they automatically add in a list of links on top of elements they recognize. And they don't do structural linking, but rather they recognize keywords or key phrases. And they say, for this key phrase, we have the following links available. And so they actually generate some of these sets of links automatically. And you can also add in, so if it's something like IBM, you can add in things, your own links directly as well. There have been a lot of controversy with smart tags. And these are things that we expect that if we're successful, we might bump into some of these same criticisms. So we're going to have to figure out how to deal with these. The old problem of information overload, you suddenly have too many links potentially available. The idea that some people might not want you to add some links to their documents. We're not actually changing the content of their document, but we're just actually putting links on top of it. So the documents are going to appear different than they originally anticipated. So that could potentially be a problem for some people, or at least some companies. One of the smart tag critiques is that this has been a way for people to add in advertisements or little digs on their competitors. So there have been some problems with people not being nice to each other that have come up, or just adding advertisements, which some of us are tired of. And it's not structured, so these only handle content-based relationships. They don't handle the structural relationships, which actually I feel are most of the relationships that are people are going to find useful are these structural ones. So they're not even addressed by smart tags or quick click or the other systems. And there's a whole bunch of work that's been done on link services in the area of hypermedia. Systems that will add links automatically to the bibliography or the citations at the bottom of your article, such as SFX does. It's used a lot in the library community. There are a whole series of link services, but mostly to help you make manual links in your application. So if I have my business application or other one, it'll allow me to make a link. The user to go in and say, I want to link this object to this object. So the linking in most of these systems is manual. It's not automated. And we're focusing on the automated. You want to provide manual also. And we might borrow some of these services to provide manual linking on top of the automated linking that we're doing. There are a bunch of hypermedia engines that, again, will support the link services that will also do some automated linking, sometimes based on keywords. There's a system called, these are mostly keyword linking that these are doing, or manual linking. OO Navigator only works in Smalltalk. It's probably the one that's most similar to what we're doing, but Smalltalk is not used too much anymore. And finally, there's a lot of generation of links that goes on in a lot of the web database type of applications, a lot of the e-shopping, e-commerce applications. If you have a product catalog, those pages are often retrieved from a database and created on the fly. But often those are going to be, almost always those links at the moment are single links. If you click on an element, it takes you somewhere, where we will generate a list of links to related services that might be inside that application or in a different application. So we're doing, again, much more broadly. Also, those are based on database. We're much broader than just database applications. And finally, what it might take to get this what you want when you want it. I think it's going to take three things to bring this to the everyday systems that we're all using. The first one's going to be a mindset of system developers. First of all, to think, I really should provide a lot of meta information for people, which is much more than I thought about before. In part, developers are going to have to think that way. People might have to demand that and say, I really want this in the applications we're developing or the applications I'm using. Have developers be willing to release control to the user to actually navigate much more within an application than they've been doing at the moment. So it's really a design philosophy for developers. It needs to be demanded. And for, to some extent, people just need to see it. It's not a commonplace thing yet, so people aren't, it's not really on people's radar screen yet. So we need some exposure for these ideas. Then we need to provide the tools for people to make it easy for people to do this, for developers to do this especially. So relationship analysis is a tool for analyzing a domain to figure out what meta information might be possible and should be there for the various kinds of users. The meta information engine that automatically generates this. We need wrappers for everyday systems so that they can be integrated in automatically. And then people have to start writing, especially these knowledge sharing services. We need annotation tools. We need a way of writing guided tours. And some of these knowledge sharing tools are available on a small scale, but they're not generally available yet, or they're not widely used yet. And finally, everyone should have access to this. So we need to be thinking about taking our relationship rules and our wrappers and having some kind of repository so lots of systems get access to them. And then also, I think I didn't talk about this, somehow it slipped, but for the content-based analysis, we need to have glossaries and thesauri and lexicons that essentially are for keywords. If I have a keyword, who can give me some links for this particular keyword? So we need to make these glossaries and thesauri also available globally. So you can't centralize these entirely. It's going to have to be based on a distributed architecture, but somehow so everybody gets access to these. And these are the various steps we think need to be done to really make meta information widespread. There are a lot of interesting issues. Again, here are just a couple of them. Access privileges. Do you make your meta information widely available, or is it restricted to your work group or you personally? How do we manage this? Just legal and ethical issues of third-party authoring and linking. Some companies do not want you to add links to their documents at all. They don't even want you to link to their documents at all. And they've even, at least in the United States, and I think Britain, have instituted lawsuits against people who have made links to their documents. You can't link to us without permission, so we're going to have to worry about that as well. And there's all sorts of issues of quality. How do I know that these links are good and are going to be useful? And how do I know they're not just going to lead me to an advertisement that I really don't want to follow? So as a final slide, all researchers like to boast about their contributions, what they're doing that's new and hopefully helpful. I think the whole concept of meta information is relatively new. Just the idea of broadening beyond metadata so you really understand the context around an element. Relationship analysis, I believe, is fairly new, is a new approach to software engineering in general, as well as being applied to this particular area of what we're calling web engineering. Meta information engine and the idea of lightweight systems integration is new. Dealing with these issues of virtual documents appears to be new. Not a lot of people are really going and applying linking to virtual documents much yet, and then don't have to face these. And just the design philosophy of why, what you want, when you want it. And I'd like to thank you all for coming here at after work, and probably you want to go home next and relax. And be very happy to entertain any more questions.